Hey there, and welcome to the Girl Means Business podcast, the show where we're all about helping you feel confident both as a mom and a business owner. I'm your host, Kendra Swalls, mom of two, former teacher, and full-time photographer and business coach. Each week, we'll discuss the challenges, success, and secrets that make you say, I can do this, because you absolutely can. So pop in those earbuds, grab your favorite snack, and let's get ready, because this girl means business. Hey there, and welcome back to the Girl Means Business podcast. This week, we have an expert guest interview episode with Sarah Noelle Block. Sarah is a writer, an editor, and a content marketing strategist. So if you listened to a couple of episodes ago, my content, the episode on content ideas, I talked about how a couple of episodes coming up were going to be sort of content focused. And the reason why is because in the world we live in now, the digital marketing age, content is so important. Your content is how you get noticed. It's how you build community. It is how your audience connects with you and you educate them. So creating content and understanding how content plays into your business is a really important aspect of marketing. And if you are taking shots every time I say content, you're probably already wasted by now. I apologize. So I want to introduce you to our guest, Sarah Noelle Block. She is incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to content. She primarily focuses on B2B marketing with her company, Tiny Marketing. However, the strategies that she teaches her B2B clients can be applied to small businesses everywhere. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation and learn a lot. So let's dive into my conversation with our expert, Sarah Noelle Block. Sarah, welcome to the Girl Means Business podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited to chat with you today. We're going to be talking all about content and the types of content and content marketing, all the things. But before we get into that, can you tell us a little bit about your background, your story, kind of what you do and who you are?
Yeah, I'll give you the cliff notes of my origin story as if I was a superhero.
I love it.
So my business is Tiny Marketing, and it came out of a hard situation I was in. I was a one-person marketing department for a 7-company group.
Oh, wow.
And overwhelmed out of my mind. I just had 7 presidents that I was answering to with different goals, and it was really, really hard. So one day, as I'm pouting in my cubicle, I start to think about, like, how can I make this work with just me? So I built out the framework that I use now with all of my clients. And that was able to get my clients to their highest revenue year in 60 years.
Wow.
And we had 30% attribution to marketing. So it killed it. And now I use that framework with all of my clients.
That's amazing. So is marketing what you've always kind of wanted to do? Or did you end up there in a kind of a roundabout way?
No, that was it. That was all I ever wanted to do.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I love writing. So it was the only career I could think of that was easy to, like, it wasn't a dream.
Yeah.
I could write and still do that.
That's awesome. It's so funny because then, you know, a lot of the interviews I do are with small business owners who have left like a 9-to-5 that was kind of their career path to begin with, which is what mine was. I went into education and then have pivoted and gone into running their own business. So it's kind of cool to talk to somebody who's like, no, this was what I wanted to do and this is what I'm doing it and I'm doing it the way I want to do it. And that's amazing. Yeah. I love that.
I am one of those like single-minded person, like this is the thing I'm going to accomplish.
That's awesome. Yeah. I actually had a moment in college where I was in the education program for teaching. And I remember thinking my cousin's girlfriend was in marketing at her school. And I had a moment where I was like, oh, that could be really fun. I was like, that would be like really interesting and different. And like, I was kind of burned out with the classes I was taking. And then I was like, no, but this is the safe path. Like, this is the path that like, I know I can rely on. I know what I'm doing here. And then here we are, you know, all these years later and I'm doing marketing. So it all comes full circle. Exactly. Well, so today we want to talk about content and content marketing and different types of content that you can utilize in your business. But I want to start with, can you give us a little bit of sort of context to why is content so important? Because a lot of my listeners are not content creators by nature. We are creatives, and whether we're photographers or writers or florists or artists or something like that, but creating content nowadays seems like everybody is a content creator, no matter what your business is. So can you kind of give us a little insight into why you think that is so important and why you think every business owner needs to be using content?
Yeah, I think it was Seth Godin who said content marketing is marketing.
Yeah.
That's all marketing is now, because you need to get people to discover you exist, trust you, and like you enough that they want to hire you. That no-like trust factor doesn't come any other way except to create content so you have that visibility and you build your authority. So it's kind of a non-negotiable in marketing now.
Yeah. I think the key word you said there was like build your authority. I think that's so important. And I hear a lot of, you know, there's always these buzzwords that float around. And right now I feel like one of the buzzwords I'm hearing a lot is thought leader. Like you need to set yourself up as a thought leader in your industry. And content is one way that you do that, obviously, because you're putting out your, you know, your ideas, your thoughts, your, you know, whatever industry or niche that you're in. So let's break down, like when you say content, I think a lot of people immediately go to social media. But that's what types, but are there other, like, what are the types of content that you kind of see as being the leader in content right now?
Yeah, the leader is video right now across all channels. And I think that it has a lot to do with AI and people missing like an authentic relationship with people.
Yeah.
When you're seeing a video of them, you're like, that's the actual person. I'm communicating directly with this person, interacting with them. And it's a way that they can, like, you gain your visibility. They know you exist and they start to see your personality, because you want to attract the right people and repel the wrong people. And that is a great way to do it. So video first is a great way to go. And then you can repurpose everything else to make it work.
Yeah. So video, I know, can be really intimidating for people, especially people who, like, so I'll just use photographers as an example. We are comfortable behind the camera, not so much in front of the camera all the time. So the idea of video, and I also think I want to clarify too, when you say video, are you saying, I mean, obviously it's all forms, it's long form, short form, you know, reels, TikToks, YouTube, all
webinars,
the things.
Virtual events.
Okay. So that's a good point, because I do think we've kind of, when someone hears video, they immediately think like TikTok, but
there's
it can be
different kinds.
Yeah. Okay. So how would you help somebody? Like if you had a client coming and going, okay, you need to be doing more video, but they're not, that's not necessarily something they've done or they are comfortable doing. What are some tips you have for like getting into creating video for someone who maybe hasn't done that yet?
Yeah. So there's two directions you can go if you want to do video and absolutely hate being on video. You can get a lot of B-roll and just get video footage of things going on in your life and then set text and audio to that. And then you'll have your video without having to be the star of the show. It doesn't have to be a talking head. The other way to go is have someone interview you and then cut it down into your shorts, reels, YouTube videos, whatever you want. But when you're talking to someone like me and you are talking, there's a lot less pressure. You're not just talking to this like beeping light on a camera. You're talking to a human and you're going to be more yourself. So getting someone to interview you, then during editing, cut them out and you have your content right there.
Oh, that's really smart. Cause that is true. Like it's so much more comfortable having a conversation. And when you say have, like, I mean, it could just be a friend or someone, other business owner, y'all take to like swap, like I'll interview you and then you interview me and we'll use the videos and things like that.
Right. The B-roll, exactly.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be complicated at all. And the B-roll thing, I think that just takes practice, because a lot of times we just don't think about it. I've gotten better about, like, if I'm in my office, like working, I'll set up my tripod and I'll put my phone on it and record a little bit of me like editing photos or podcasting or, you know, doing things around the house or whatever. But I do think that takes some, you know, like you have to make note to like, oh yeah, I need to be doing this. I know a lot of, like, again, I work with a lot of photographers, and so they're always trying to get like the little camera mounts to record on their phone while they're taking sessions. I mean, that's B-roll. Yeah. That's easy stuff you can do. And then it doesn't have to require you to, like you said, be kind of in front of the camera, talking to the camera. I think that's where people get really anxious for sure.
Yeah. It takes the pressure off completely. It's just a camera sitting behind you as you work.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's this idea too, that I just, in fact, the episode that just came out this week on the podcast at the time we're recording this is a lot about the idea of like worrying about what people think about the content you put out onto social media. I think video especially, we all get very self-conscious about, okay, well, if I put this out and I don't sound perfect or I don't look perfect or it's not completely polished or it's not fully edited, like it's not going to be good enough. Like, yeah. So what do you say to that? Like the idea of it having to be, you know, quote unquote, perfect.
F that. Nobody wants perfect.
I agree.
Nobody wants it. The raw, the messy, the real, it's good. People are craving that right now. That's why TikTok is so popular, because people are like no makeup in bed, having these conversations. It feels real in a world that's increasingly feeling not so real.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I just, this like last couple of nights, my husband's been out of town, so I would lay in bed at night and scroll through, like, I don't really do TikTok, but I would do Instagram reels. And I've seen a lot of these ones where it's influencers basically, or people who would in the past had done these really curated videos. And now you're starting to see them a little less polished. And my favorite is the one where it's like, they really kind of show like, okay, this is really what it looks like when I record a video. And it's like them like hitting, you know, hitting record and like running back to a spot and then like, okay, pause. Okay, now do the action and then pause at the end so I can have a place to cut, pulling the curtain back a little bit.
Yeah.
And almost kind of poking fun at the idea of this perfectly polished thing.
Yeah. People don't want it anymore. It's over. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to spend a bunch of time editing. Just be like 2008 Insta, where you're being messy with bad lighting.
I love it. Let's go back to just like MySpace days. Like, we'll just whatever content you would have put on there, we'll put it on our feed today. That's awesome. Okay. So I want to get into this idea of the four types of content. You mentioned before we were recording that for anyone who's feeling kind of overwhelmed with this idea, because especially if we're jumping right into like video, I know that can be like someone listening might be like, whoa, I'm just now starting my business, or I don't even know where to begin. So let's kind of break down the four types of content you recommend for people to be sharing. And I know you said that it kind of progressively gets a little less intimidating. So let's go through those.
Okay. It's called four C's. That's what I've named it. And we'll start with that top C. That's the most work, but not a crazy amount of work. It's like what we're doing right now, like podcasting. And that's core content. It is one thing, just one thing that you're willing to create on a regular basis. Weekly, biweekly, monthly, doesn't matter. But your people can rely on, that's the cadence that you're going to create it. And it's going to be in the same medium every time.
Does that need to be like long form, or does it matter?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you've been listening to the Girl Means Business podcast for any amount of time, then you know my love of email marketing runs deep. Not only is it a great way to generate new leads, but it's one of the most effective methods for nurturing warm leads and turning them into sales. Now, over the years, I've tested several email platforms, and my favorite by far is Flowdesk. Not only do they make email marketing simple and easy, even for the technically challenged, but they have everything you need to create stunning emails, capture leads, make sales, and automate the entire process, giving you time back in your busy day. And the cherry on top is you're only charged one flat fee, no matter how many subscribers you have. So while other platforms will increase your price when you go over your pricing tier limit, Flowdesk has no price increases or hidden fees. If you're ready to give Flowdesk a try, click the link below in the show notes to save 50% off your first year. Let Flowdesk help you design emails people will love. Click the link below and check it out. I have a feeling you're going to love it just as much as I do.
I would err on the side of long form so you could repurpose if you want to.
Okay.
So I would go with guides, like longer form video. And when I say longer form video, I mean like 5 minutes is fine.
Yeah.
On YouTube, podcasts. So those are the things that would fall into core content.
Would you say that, because I get this question a lot, is blog content still relevant as far as like being your core content?
You honestly, I question it all the time, but the stats say yes.
Okay.
That it's still working. It's still driving tons of SEO. I have quite a few construction clients and a lot of their leads come from the blogs.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So we're keeping it going.
Yeah. It's interesting because I was doing a Google search and I can't remember like what it was for the other day. And I stumbled across a couple blog posts. I think I was trying to troubleshoot something. And I actually was more interested to click on the blog post than I was like the YouTube video, just because same. I was like, I want to just kind of be able to skim through and find the one thing, one piece of this that I need. And I want like to be able to not have to pause the video and be like, okay, wait, back up. What did you say? I want to be able to like read it, let it sink in, do the action. So I definitely, I agree. I think that there are people out there who, or even like people who like video, but occasionally will still want that blog content that's easier to consume, or they can consume without having to listen to something if they're in an environment where they can't.
Yeah. I want to sit with this for a second because you hit on some important parts. One, everybody is a different kind of learner. We have like tactile people who like to manipulate to learn. We have readers, we have listeners, we have people who are visual, who want graphics mm-hmm. or video. But there's the readers in there, and I'm one of them where I prefer reading my content. Mm-hmm. So I will read a blog over watch a video any day.
Yeah.
And then you also mentioned skimmable. So making sure your blog posts are super skimmable. You have great headlines, but most importantly, you have clickable table of contents in your long form blog. So people can just skip to the part that they want.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but like I use those anytime I come across the blog where it has like, here's the five things we're going to cover. And I'm like, well, I need step four. And I can just click that, makes everything so much easier.
Boom, I'm there.
Yeah. And I think that hits on something too is like, you know, we get so focused on, okay, well, this is what the experts tell me to do as far as content goes. Like, I need to be doing X, Y, or Z, but we forget to look at our own user interface. Like, how are we actually consuming content? Like the idea of the clickable table of contents, like I utilize that, but it doesn't occur to me all the time to think about like, well, I utilize it. Why wouldn't my audience utilize it too? Maybe I should incorporate that, you know, they being will. Aware of those. Yeah. Just getting back to the basics of how do you consume content and then putting that into practice in your own business as well.
Yeah. And ask your audience, what content do they like? Survey them, interview them. I do this for my clients and we're often surprised like, oh, that's what you want? Well, that's good to know because I'm going to shift.
Yeah. That's so smart too. Like, and again, it's we think that we have to have these huge audiences before we can ask them these questions, but throw a poll up on your Instagram stories or put it in Facebook groups that you're in that have your ideal audience and just kind of see what feedback you get and run with that. That's really smart. Okay. So the first one's core content. Is there anything else on that before we move on?
No, we can move on.
Perfect.
Next is campaign content. So let's say you have an offer and you need to promote that offer. So you sit down and you batch create all of the content that would go into it. Start mind mapping. What objections do I get on the sales calls for this type of offer? What questions are people going to have? What would trigger someone to buy this offer and start creating your content from that mind mapping? And then you have all of the content that you need for like the entire quarter and it's all dripping down to that offer that you're trying to promote.
Oh, that's really smart. Okay. So I love mind mapping. So you're saying like sit down, kind of brain dump everything that you can imagine somebody might want to know or think or have questions about or mm-hmm. would be curious about around your offer. What if you have multiple offers? So should you do this with each offer each quarter?
Yeah. If you have multiple offers, I have seen it work best when you focus on one offer per quarter.
Okay.
So then it's like all in on that one.
Yeah. Okay. I love that. And that also simplifies it because then you aren't trying to do three different offers or four different offers. You can spread them out a little bit. And then just kind of maybe jumping ahead here, but let's say you have four offers just for ease of numbers. So you do one per quarter. Are you also repurposing that like quarter one content later in the year? Okay.
Yeah, you can repurpose it. You could use an automation tool to just like make sure that that content is still getting pushed out to your feeds, whatever channels you're on. So keep going with that, but like your time is spent on that one offer.
Perfect. Okay. So we've got core content, we have campaign content, and then what's the third one?
The third one is collab content. So this is partnering with someone who has a mirror audience to yours and collaborating on content. So this could be considered a collab content because you will get in front of my audience, I'm getting in front of yours. But webinar swaps are another one. Interviewing people like Harrow or Help a B2B Writer Out, those would be collab content. Guesting on someone else's podcast, guest blogging in a publication. List swaps, where you write a message about someone else's offer and they write a message about your offer to their audience. So those would all fall in the collab content.
Okay. So questions about the collab, because this is one of the things I have on my kind of goal list for the year is to do more collaborations. When people hear this idea, they're like, yes, I love this idea because it puts me in front of people's audiences and vice versa. But how do you go about finding and connecting with the people you want to collaborate with?
So I'll tell you how I did it. I launched my business on collabs. Like that's how I built my audience was collabs. I first reached out to product companies that had the same audience as mine. Okay. And focusing first on the products that I used in my own business or that I used with my clients, because then I can give them really valuable insights. And they already know that my audience is going to care because I'm having my clients use their product. So that's one way I started. And building relationships on LinkedIn was a huge part of it too. Having some sort of platform that you can use to highlight people, give someone an offer and an incentive to connect with you, like having a podcast is really nice, or having an email list where that's an incentive. Like, I want to get in front of your email list. So those are a couple ways to start. And then reaching out to publications that cater to the audience that you're trying to sell to. I think that was the first thing I did was that. And just getting my bio in those articles and these bigger publications that my clients or my, I wish they were clients, people were reading. I got my first three clients that way. People just seeing my information in the bio of an article they read.
Yeah. I think that that's a really key thing when you think about that too, because that is, it may not be instant gratification. You know, like we think about, okay, I'm going to like, let's say Instagram, I'm going to collaborate with this other Instagram account who has my similar audience or ideal audience. And we're going to collaborate on this post or this reel or this whatever. And I'm immediately going to see new people following me, new people engaging. And that's ideal. It doesn't always happen that way, but that's ideal. But when you think about these other collabs, like you were talking about the publications or the list swapping and things like that, that's a little bit more of like a long game because you aren't going to necessarily see instant results on that. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The content might not be published right away. It takes some time. Like I'll give you an example of how I use that today. If I'm, let's say I have an offer and I'm running a virtual event to get people into the funnel for my offer. I will reach out to all my collab partners and set up some sort of swap or a webinar for their audience or community to get people into my virtual event. So that's another way you could get a little bit more instant gratification is have it connected to something where you're generating those leads in a time con- contained space. Like, this event is happening on this day. So there's no choice around it.
Yeah. No, and I think that's really smart. And I know for me, some of the things that have been really successful when it comes to that, and I guess I wasn't necessarily categorizing them as collaborative content, but it was things like podcast episodes or someone who has a blog that maybe I guest post on, or like there's some local publications that I've gotten to like be part of. And those, I still see people coming to me from those. Like, I'll get people all the time who will send me a message or they'll send me a DM on Instagram. And they're like, oh yeah, I heard about you because you were on so-and-so's podcast that I listened to. And then I started listening to your podcast and then I followed you on Instagram. And it's not like that happened, you know, and maybe that was a podcast I was on a year and a half ago, but
that certainly happens.
Yeah. And that content, I think that's why, again, I kind of get on these soapboxes, but I love social media. I think it's great, but I think there are so many other places to put content out that has a much longer shelf life, like podcast and YouTube and blog content and things like that, where someone could still come across it later down the line, 6 months, 8 months, a year from now, and discover you and have this whole journey with you that you don't even know is happening.
Yeah.
But it's happening because you set the groundwork with these collaboration type posts or content.
All the time. I just got a lead the other day from a podcast that I did 2 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Just happened to listen to it now.
And, you know, and I, again, going back to the idea of, you know, how we consume things, the other day I was like, okay, I want to, I'm working on self-publishing a book. And so I was like, I need to learn about this aspect of it. And I went on to like Spotify and I searched for podcast episodes about that specific topic. And
I listened all the time.
Yes. And I listened to an episode from like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. And it was with a guest speaker who I then was like, oh, I want to go check out their book or whatever, you know, what they're doing. And so that absolutely happens. And again, if we're doing it, your audience is doing it as well.
That's exactly the way I do it too. Exactly the same way.
I don't care if it's happened last week, you know, give me the, cause that content can still be relevant from forever ago. So I think focusing on things that have that longer shelf life will get you more bang for your buck than just like the quick Instagram post that'll disappear in a couple of hours or a couple of days or whatever the shelf life is for that now.
100% with you on that. And something you said leads directly into the fourth C.
Oh, perfect. Okay, let's go with it.
Curated content. So those podcasts you're looking up for self-publishing, if you created a podcast playlist in Spotify with all of those episodes, that's content itself. So you can create curated podcast lists on very niche topics. You can pull articles from lots of different places and create a curated guide that lives on your website on a specific topic. So curated content, YouTube playlists. You can grab videos on a specific topic and put it all in a YouTube playlist. But that takes the least amount of time and it's still fresh content and value added because you're the one who took the time to find all of these great resources and pull them together.
Okay. So let me clarify, make sure I understand. So you're saying like you're not necessarily creating a playlist of your own content, but you are sharing other people's content with your audience as a way of saying, this could be beneficial to help you with this thing. Okay. Yep. I like that. That's pretty smart. So then instead, like I'll use a blog as an example. So if I create a blog post where I'm like, hey, here are, you know, six different books that I have read that I really love. And here's, you know, where you can find them. Here's little, you know, summaries of them. Then that would be curated content that I could then repurpose in other places.
Yeah, that would be a perfect one. And bonus points if you have affiliate links for them.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and I've actually, you know, I've told some people to do this. If you're based in a local, like one specific town or city, if you can do local or like location-based curated content, that's really smart.
Because that's a great idea.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I was working with a family photographer and I was like, it was over the summer. And I was like, if you were to create a blog post or a guide that was like, here are 20 free or low cost items you can do with your kids this summer, that's going to go over like gangbusters with these moms. And now they're all coming to your site to get the content. Like that's genius. And you're promoting these local places who might then also want to share your content.
Yes. Don't forget to tell all those companies that they're mentioned in your article. Send it to them so they're sharing it out.
Yes. Yeah. No, I love this. Is giving me like so many ideas, and hopefully everyone listening, you're getting all these ideas now too, because this is amazing.
Get your notebook out.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So I do want to talk about the idea of, we've mentioned it a few times, but repurposing. So these four C's, the core content, the campaign, collab, curated content, how often, because obviously the idea is to work smarter and spend less time creating the content. So how often are you repurposing this content so that you aren't on this constant hamster wheel of, I have to create new all the time?
Yeah. So I do the core content. And what I do is I'll throw my podcast in Opus and I'll have Opus create all of my shorts that would be used to promote it. And then you could also change the orientation and put it on LinkedIn as a regular post. And then I use a rule of three where I'll find like the three most important parts of each of my podcast episodes, right? Three different like content pieces. LinkedIn is my channel of choice. Mm-hmm. So three different LinkedIn posts about it that are going with those different angles, but all leading back to that podcast. And that's a really easy way to do it. And then I throw my podcast into content at scale and it will listen to my podcast and create an article for it. So then that's my last piece.
Okay. So that also is really smart. The fact that you are utilizing tools to help you do this. So, Because I think that as someone who is like, I'm a one man show, I don't have a team of people taking my content and repurposing it for me, that there are platforms, there are programs out there that will kind of work as your team for you to help you do these things. So, okay. Mention them again. You said, what was the first one? Opus?
Yes. So I use Opus to cut into shorts.
Okay.
And it uses AI. So it just finds all the hooks for you and you have your brand guide already in there and it designs everything for you. Everything's done for you in a click.
I hadn't even heard of that one. I'm going to have to check that one out. And then what was the second one you mentioned that does your like LinkedIn?
Content at scale is the other thing that I use. And all I have to do is like give them the link of my podcast episode and I've already pre-trained it for my voice. So it creates the article based off of the podcast episode in my voice. And then I use that as my LinkedIn newsletter.
Perfect. But it's not like it's a transcript. It like puts it into like
it's a full-on article. Readable.
Okay.
Yeah. And it does like Google searches, make sure that all the links are in there.
That's amazing. Yeah. There's so many incredible tools. And I know there's a lot of people who are, you know, nervous about AI, but I think that there's a lot of really, really helpful stuff coming out of it that can make our job so much easier, especially with this idea that we are needing to put out a consistent content hamster wheel, if you will, a cycle of content. And so anything you can use that's going to help make that so much easier for you is going to be a win-win in my book.
With you on that, if it can make me work faster and better, I'm all in.
Yes. Love it. Okay. Well, this was super, super helpful. Thank you so much for sharing. Again, you said the core content, campaign content, collab content, curated content.
Yes.
So if you're taking notes, write those down. Make sure that you are utilizing all those, repurposing those in various ways, simplifying it with tools, and then using that content marketing to build that know, like, and trust factor with your audience, because that is what's going to lead them from discovering you to working with you. So thank you, Sarah. Yeah. This was super helpful. Okay. Tell everybody where they can find you, how they can learn more about you, or maybe even work with you.
Yeah. So my website is my name, Sarah Noel Block. And I'll create a page just for you. I'll send it to you afterwards that we can put in the show notes page that'll take people to my podcast, which is Tiny Marketing, and just give them some goodies and some giveaways and promo codes and all that fun stuff.
Perfect. Well, thank you. We will definitely have that in the show notes. Yes. And LinkedIn. And I'll definitely have that linked below so that everybody can come and find you and connect with you. Make sure you tell her you heard her here on the Girl Means Business podcast. And thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode. Don't forget to leave a review and follow us on socials at Girl Means Business. See you next week.